is quite possible to have two solids, or three or four solids so arranged that their worlds do not touch each other, but one set of worlds occupies the spaces between the other set of worlds. You will appreciate that under this system there could be many apparently solid objects which occupied the same space simultaneously. We cannot perceive this in normal life, because we do not have a suitable nor an adequate range of perceptions. And as here on this world we cannot easily enter the fourth dimension, we have to accept the printed words of explanation or taped voices of explanation. To give you just a crude idea, suppose you have two forks, ordinary garden forks, if you like, or table forks. You can pass the tines of one through the space between the tines of the other. One set of tines occupies the spaces between the other set of tines. The two fork blades occupy what is 66. Essentially the same amount of space without impinging upon the living space of the other. Originally people thought that objects had length and breadth. Matters improved somewhat and people came to the conclusion that there was length, breadth, and thickness, so that people lived in a three-dimensional world, that is length equals one dimension, breadth equals two dimensions, and thickness equals three dimensions. But it is quite obvious that we live in a three-dimensional world of dimensions, such as a fourth, a fifth, and so on. To give you something to think about, our three-dimensional object has length, breadth, and thickness, but here is another dimension. How long will it exist? We have a further dimension of time. Time becomes a fourth dimension in this case. The average person, by way of illustration, cannot see infrared rays without special equipment. This proves, of course, that there are things beyond the range of the average human perceptions. And it follows from this that objects emitting infrared rays and lying in a plane beyond length, breadth, and thickness would be quite invisible to the average person. May we digress for a moment? May we remind you that there are sounds which are quite inaudible to humans, but which cats and dogs hear clearly. Soundless dog whistle. Probably everyone knows about that. At the illustrations in lesson 6 of You Forever, what we term the symbolic keyboard, will observe that after sound, we have sight, and there are certain cases in which sounds have been almost seen. A perceived would be a better term, because under certain conditions if a person is very clairvoyant they can see the shape of sound. Probably heard someone say, oh, it was such a round sound or something similar, from which we may gather that quite a number of people have an idea of sound as a shape such as a round sound, a square sound, or a long drawn-out sound. Let's get back to the point we were making before we digressed in the previous paragraphs. A three-dimensional object such as a house or a person or a tree casts a two-dimensional shadow, because the shadow has length and breadth but no thickness. So we should say that the shadow also has a further dimension, that of time, the time of its enduring. Get that for a moment and 67. Go back and say that a three-dimensional object casts a two-dimensional shadow. We can assume that a four-dimensional object would show a shadow of three dimensions, so those of you who have seen a ghost may actually have seen the shadow of a person in the fourth dimension. A ghost is a person who has apparent breadth, thickness, and height, but is of somewhat shadowy substance. As shadowy as a shadow, in fact. Why should it not be that after a dimensional visitor, who is invisible to us because of his four dimensions, nevertheless manifests to us in three dimensions, or as a ghost which has form without substantial substance. Ports of objects which the press rather foolishly call flying saucers. These objects have appeared and disappeared at fantastic speeds and without any sound at all. Change direction at a speed far beyond that of a human body. Now, why should we not suppose that some flying saucers may be the shadow of a four-dimensional object? Change of direction. Consider holding a mirror in your hand and focusing the sun's rays on a wall. You can make that blob of light dance about and change direction at a rate far in excess of that which any human mechanism could manage. In a sheet of frosted glass facing a person or entity who had no conception of the appearance of a human being, and supposing the human, who was concealed at the opposite side of the sheet of frosted glass, put four fingers and a thumb in contact with the glass. The other side, knowing nothing of the shape of humans, would see five blobs, five dark smears, just as some people have seen blobs in the sky. You may wonder what all this has to do with metaphysics. It has a very great deal to do with metaphysics. See, we live in a three-dimensional world, but the highest form of truth can be perceived only when we go beyond a three-dimensional world, go beyond time and space, for time is relative. Time is merely a convention established by mankind to suit his own convenience. You think that time is not relative? All right, supposing that you have to go to the dentist, and you have to have a tooth or teeth extracted. When you are having your aches and pains, time appears to stand still. It appears that you are in the dental chair forever. Now, you have a very enjoyable experience with a person to whom you are deeply attached. Find that time flies. Time is just a relative thing. It appears to drag or hasten abominably according to our mood. Let us suppose that there are some form of people who live only in a two-dimensional world, that is, they live on a world on which there is length and breadth but no depth. They are like shadows, they are thinner than the thinnest sheet of paper, but having no perception of depth they can have no perception of space, because space is that which is beyond the sky, and to bring in the sky would be to bring in a third dimension. To them space is inconceivable. A railroad track is similar to a world of one dimension, length. A train conductor could indicate his position from just one point of reference. He could say where he was by referring to the known location of a station or from a signal, or from some other well-known mark. Upon the sea is as a person occupying a two-dimensional world, for the ship is not confined to rails but it can go forward or sideways or even backwards, so it has the use of length and width. As a creature of three dimensions, it can go forward, sideways, and up or down. That, you will perceive, gives us the three dimensions theory. Actually, to us it is knowledge of dimensions will explain many things which otherwise must be considered as a mystery. Teleportation, for example, in which an object is moved from one room to another without any visible person doing the moving. An object can be moved by teleportation from a locked room to another room. Because we merely have to think of our two-dimensional being, if we three-dimensionals had a series of boxes without any tops to them, the two-dimensional people who could be in those boxes would be completely confined, completely enclosed, because not having any conception of height they would not know that there was no roof above them. And so if we three-dimensional creatures reached in through the open roof and moved something from one box to another, it would, to the two-dimensional people, be an absolute miracle in which an object in one secured room was moved to another secured room. A two-dimensional person would. 69. The roof above. In just the same way we three-dimensional people could have no conception of an opening which is quite clear in the fourth dimension, so that the person in the fourth dimension could reach down into a locked room, for the room would be locked in three dimensions only, and move that which he desired to move through what was an opening clear to four-dimensional people. The object would be moved from the three-dimensional world and for a moment would be in the four-dimensional world, where it would penetrate through what we prefer to call solid walls. Something of an illustration when we think of the way that radio or television waves can penetrate apparently solid walls and still activate a radio or television receiver, to which we have already referred, plays a very important part in the life of man. But that which we call time differs from man to man and animal to animal. I suggest that you think about this under different conditions in your everyday life. When you are late for an appointment, see how the hand races around the clock face. When you are expecting someone and he or she, more usually she, keeps you waiting, time appears to stand still. Animals have their own conception of time, and their conception of time is quite different from that of humans. Humans live at a different rate. An insect which lives for 24 hours of human time can still have as full a life as a human living for 70 years. The insect can have a mate, can raise a family, and see its own family have their families in turn. The allotted span of an animal is 20 years. Those 20 years will appear as 70 years or so appears to a human, and within the space allotted to the animal he will be able to function just as a man could function in his longer lifespan. It is worth a thought that all creatures, insect, animal, or human, have approximately the same number of heartbeats in a lifetime. It's about time was readily understood by the wise men of centuries ago. There is a very holy book, one of the great Bibles of the Far East, which is called the Srimad Bhagavat, in which appears this. Once a great king took his daughter to the home of the creator, Brahma, who lived in a different dimension. Most concerned that his daughter had arrived, at a marriageable age and still had not found an acceptable suitor, was anxious to find a good husband for his daughter. After arriving at the home of Brahma, he had to wait for just a very few moments before he could be escorted into the presence and thus make his request. To his intense amazement, Brahma replied, "O king, when you go back to earth you will not see any of your friends or relatives, your cities or your palaces, for although it seems to you that you arrived here only a few moments ago from the earth you knew, yet those few moments of our time are the equivalent of several thousand years of your time when you were on the earth age, and your daughter whom you have brought here will marry Lord Krishna's brother, Balarama. Thus, she who was born thousands of years ago, will be married to Balarama after several thousand more years, because in just the time it takes for you to leave my presence and journey again through time to earth, several thousand years of earth time will have passed." The king and his daughter returned to the earth which, according to their own estimate of time, they had left but a few minutes before, found what appeared to be a new world, with what appeared to be a new civilization, a different type of people, a different culture, and a different religion. Had been told, several thousand years had passed in the time of the earth, although he and his daughter, traveling to a different dimension, had seen but a few minutes pass. Hindu belief, which was written in the holy books of the Hindu faith thousands of years ago. If this is not possibly the foundation of some of the things that Dr. Einstein produced as the theory of relativity, probably you have not fully studied Einstein's theory of relativity, but very, very briefly, he explained time as a fourth dimension. So taught that time is not a steady, unvarying flow of something. He realized that a second ticked on. After 60 such second ticks a minute had passed, and after 60 minute ticks an hour had passed. Is convenient time, that is mechanical time. Einstein considered time as a sense, as a form of perception. As no two people see pre 72 precisely the same colors, so Einstein taught that no two people have precisely the same sense of time. A year 365 days, but it is just a trip round the sun, an orbit around the sun day. So we upon the earth do an orbit of the sun roughly every 365 days, but compare this with a person who lives on Mercury, that Mercury completes its orbit around the sun in 88 days, and during that orbit it rotates just once upon its axis, whereas, as you know, we upon earth rotate once in 24 hours. For you to ponder, do you know that if a clock be attached to a moving system, it will slow down as that moving system's velocity increases? Material, metal, wood, ceramic, anything you like, but it is a definite measuring rod of a definite length. If you attach that to any moving system, it will apparently shrink in the direction of its motion according to the velocity of the system. These things, such as changes in the clock, or the contraction of the rod, are not in any way to do with the construction of the things, nor are they of a mechanical phenomenon. They are instead to do with the Einstein theory of relativity. You may have your meter stick. Let us say that our metal rod was 1 meter or 1 yard long. So now if it goes through space at 90% of the velocity of light, it will shrink to half a meter and, in theory, if its speed is increased until it moves at the speed of light, it would, according to the Einstein theory of relativity, shrink to nothing at all. How you could tie a clock of some kind to that meter stick, its rate of time keeping would vary so that as the meter stick approached the speed of light the clock would go more and more slowly, or would appear to, until at the speed of light the clock would stop completely. You criticize this by saying, "Oh well, I have driven the car, and I haven't seen the car contract." That these changes can be detected only when the speed of the moving article approaches near to the speed of light. A brand new car and you race along the road, it doesn't mean to say that your car is going to get any shorter, because, no matter if you can do 100 or 120 miles an hour, that speed is still all too slow to make any measurable difference in the length of your car. According to Einstein, that if a spaceship should be sent into space and it would approach the speed of light, then it would contract and disappear. You know what that means. Assuming that Einstein is right, being able to do astral travel, we know that Einstein is wrong, just as were those scientists who said that man would never exceed the speed of sound. Einstein is wrong, just as wrong as the person who said man would never exceed 30 miles an hour, But we have to learn by the mistakes of others. It might save us from having mistakes of our own. So let us see what would happen according to the theory of Einstein. The crew in the spaceship are all wise men who are able to make accurate observations. The ship is traveling at a very high speed indeed, almost approaching the speed of light. It would take 10 years to reach from the Earth to that other planet. Is the time and distance it takes light to reach a certain point by traveling one full year. So 10 light years is the time it takes light to reach that distant object. Going to travel at about the speed of light. Let's forget all about Einstein for the moment, and let us say that this ship can travel at the speed of light. So, supposing the ship is going 10 light years to this distant planet, and then without stopping it is going to come back. Supposing anything is permissible. A journey which will last for 20 years, 10 years out and 10 years back. As aboard are going to be frightfully bored, shut up for 20 years. Not only that, but they are certainly going to need a whole pile of food and drink with them. Anyhow, we are just supposing. If you are to believe Einstein, there won't be these difficulties. They won't need food for 20 years. If the ship is going to travel at even close to the speed of light, everything aboard the ship will slow down. Will be slow in all their functions, their heartbeats, their breathing, and their physical actions, and even their thoughts. Whereas with us a thought may take a tenth of a second. When traveling at the speed of light, according to Einstein, it might take 10 seconds for a thought on Earth, but 10 weeks for the duration of the same thought when traveling near the speed of light. Going to have certain very important advantages according to Einstein. Few hours. Do you want to have a better illustration than that? We have made a spaceship which will travel at almost the speed of light. The ship is outfitted and ready to go on a journey far beyond our solar system, far beyond Mars, Venus, Jupiter, Pluto, Saturn, and all of them. Is going, instead, to a different universe. Is going to take, at the speed of light, 20 years. In 1970, then, the spaceship lifts off. 10 years traveling to this far distant world. And then it returns, another journey of 10 years, 20 years in all. You are young men, one of them is just 20 years of age when he leaves on that eventful journey. And his wife is the same age as he, 20 years of age. When the poor fellow returns after just a few hours of traveling at near the speed of light, he will get the biggest shock of his life. His wife is 20 years older than himself, while he and other members of the crew have aged just a very few hours. The others left upon the Earth have aged by the temporal time, that is, 20 years. This man of 20 and a few hours now has a wife of 40, and which the United States very much desires to keep quiet and keep out of the public knowledge. Particular matter which follows is absolutely authentic, absolutely genuine, and those who are sufficiently highly placed may be able to dig into some of the United States naval records. October 1943, an attempt was made to render a ship of the United States Navy invisible. This had disastrous results because some of the scientists were so hidebound that they could not use their imagination, but had to go by the book. In the Second World War, the United States as well as other people advertised for ideas of how to make super weapons, etc. One idea was as a result of Professor Einstein's letter to President Roosevelt, in which the unified field theory was set out in some detail. Point in going into the technical aspects of the unified field. But we might say that it does embrace a certain amount of knowledge about the fourth dimension. And Doctor of Science, a very clever man indeed, used terms relating to the unified field, and working in conjunction with the United States Navy in October 1943, he was able to make a shield, a type of ray, which completely encompassed a destroyer, would extend about 300 feet from its center of origin. And anything inside that field became completely invisible, so that to the observer outside the ship and crew disappeared. Sadly, when the ship again became visible, many of the crew were insane. Examining physicians afterwards used sodium pentothal to try to dig down into the subconsciousness of crew members to find out exactly what happened. From our point of view, and in connection with the fourth dimension, it seems that on one occasion the invisible ship reappeared several hundred miles away in Chesapeake Bay. And consult the files of the local newspapers. or get hold of some of the records in such a book as M.K. Jessop and the Allendale Letters compiled by Riley Crabb was apparently published by Gray Barker in the United States called The Strange Case of Dr. Jessop. This is a very serious discussion. This is not hoax or even hearsay evidence. States government have gone to great trouble to try to silence anyone who has discussed such things as this. And there have been reports of people dying mysteriously after having been in possession of certain information. Government also seems to have had some success in silencing the press. For that surely they deserve the Nobel Prize and a few Oscars thrown in for good measure. Invisible ship business. There has been one report inadvertently released which says that the invisible ship materialized in a port, and some quite bemused sailors staggered ashore and fairly tumbled into a public house. They were seen by perhaps 30 or 40 people, and in mid-sentence while they were ordering drinks they disappeared, vanished, went into thin air. People who are sufficiently interested should read the books mentioned above and should also try to find some method of combing newspapers round about 1944 and 1956. There are hints, and into instances actual reports. It is clear that if one could suddenly switch a ship or a 76 special weapon into the fourth dimension and then bring it back to the third dimension at some designated spot, the Chinese could be suppressed very thoroughly. It might even give the Russians a few frights. People laughed about the laser beam, but that little ruby light has proved to be all that was claimed for it and a few things besides. So, if research would only be continued with suitable safeguards, it would be found that documents solidly locked in a bank vault could be removed by way of the fourth dimension because, remember, if a thing has four walls to you, that is because you are in a three-dimensional world, and in a fourth dimension there may be an opening through which one could enter. Returning to this matter of the invisible ship, it is thought that if the men had been conditioned to know what to expect, they would not have gone insane. Because the horrid shock of finding oneself in a different time continuum is enough to unhinge anyone's mind unless they are preconditioned. Many, many years ago, in the days of Plato, there was discussion about the fourth dimension, but even in those days scientists were not able to perceive that which was metaphorically perched on the end of their noses. Plato had a dialogue which seems to be rather applicable to this discussion about the fourth dimension, and so as it is essential that in order that we may obey the commandment, man know thyself, we must understand the relationship of the different dimensions, the first, the second, the third, and the fourth. So let us have here to end this chapter the dialogue of Plato the philosopher, and how he tried to make it clear to people that which was so obvious to him. Behold, human beings living in a sort of underground den, they have been there from their childhood, and have their legs and necks chained. The chains are arranged in such a manner as to prevent them from turning their heads. At a distance above and behind them the light of a fire is blazing, and between the fire and the prisoners there is a raised way, and you will see, if you look, a low wall built along the way, like the screen which marionette players have before them, over which they show the puppets. Imagine men passing along the wall carrying vessels, which appear over the wall, also figures of men and animals, made of wood and stone and various materials, and some of the passengers, as you would expect, are talking, and some of them are silent. 77. That is a strange image, he said, and they are strange prisoners. Like ourselves, I replied, and they see only their own shadows, or the shadows of one another, which the fire throws on the opposite wall of the cave. True, he said, how could they see anything but the shadows if they were never allowed to move their heads? And of the objects which are being carried in like manner they would only see the shadows? Yes, he said. And if they were able to talk with one another, would they not suppose that they were naming what was actually before them? Very true. And suppose further that the prison had an echo which came from the other side. Would they not be sure to fancy that the voice which they heard was that of a passing shadow? No question, he replied. There can be no question, I said, that the truth would be to them just nothing but the shadows of the images. That is certain. And now look again and see how they are released and cured of their folly. At first, When any one of them is liberated and compelled suddenly to go up and turn his neck around and walk and look at the light, he will suffer sharp pains, the glare will distress him, and he will be unable to see the realities of which in his former state he had seen the shadows, and then imagined someone saying to him that what he saw before was an illusion, but that now he is approaching real being and has a truer sight and vision of more real things. What will be his reply? And you may further imagine that his instructor is pointing to the objects as they pass and requiring him to name them. Will he not be in a difficulty? Will he not fancy that the shadows which he formerly saw are truer than the objects which are now shown to him? Far truer. And if he is compelled to look at the light, will he not have a pain in his eyes which will make him turn away to take refuge in the object of vision which he can see, and which he will conceive to be clearer than the things which are now being shown to him? True, he said. 78. And suppose once more that he is reluctantly dragged up a steep and rugged ascent, and held fast and forced into the presence of the sun himself. Do you not think that he will be pained and irritated, and when he approaches the light he will have his eyes dazzled, and will not be able to see any of the realities which are now affirmed to be the truth? Not all in a moment, he said. He will require to get accustomed to the sight of the upper world. And first he will see the shadows best, next the reflections of men and other objects in the water, and then the objects themselves. Next he will gaze upon the light of the moon and the stars, and he will see the sky and the stars by night, better than the sun, or the light of the sun, by day? Certainly. And at last he will be able to see the sun, and not mere reflections of him in the water, but he will see him as he is in his own proper place, and not in another, and he will contemplate his nature. Certainly. And after this he will reason that the sun is he who gives the seasons and the years, and is the guardian of all that is in the visible world, and in a certain way the cause of all things which he and his fellows have been accustomed to behold? Clearly, he said, he would come to the other first and to this afterwards. And when he remembered his old habitation, and the wisdom of the den and his fellow prisoners, do you not suppose that he would felicitate himself on the change, and pity them? Certainly, he would. And if they were in the habit of conferring honors on those who were quickest to observe and remember and foretell which of the shadows went before, and which followed after, and which were together, do you think he would care for such honors and glories, or envy the possessors of them? Would he not say with Homer, better to be a poor man, and have a poor master, and endure anything, than to think and live after their manner? Yes, he said, I think that he would rather suffer anything than live after their manner. Imagine once more, I said, that such an one coming suddenly out of the sun were to be replaced in his old situation. 79. He not certain to have his eyes full of darkness? Very true, he said. And if there were a contest, and he had to compete in measuring the shadows with the prisoners who have never moved out of the den, during the time that his sight is weak, and before his eyes are steady, and the time which would be needed to acquire this new habit of sight might be very considerable, would he not be ridiculous? Men would say of him that up he went and down he comes without his eyes, and that there was no use in even thinking of ascending, and if anyone tried to loose another and lead him up to the light, let them only catch the offender in the act, and they would put him to death. No question, he said. This allegory, I said, you may now append to the previous argument. The prison is the world of sight, the light of the fire is the sun, the ascent and vision of the things above you may truly regard as the upward progress of the soul into the intellectual world. And you will understand that those who attain to this beatific vision are unwilling to descend to human affairs, but their souls are ever hastening into the upper world in which they desire to dwell. And is there anything surprising in one who passes from divine contemplations to human things, misbehaving himself in a ridiculous manner? There is nothing surprising in that, he replied. Anyone who has common sense will remember that the bewilderments of the eyes are of two kinds, and arise from two causes, either from coming out of the light or from going into the light, which is true of the mind's eye, quite as much as of the bodily eye. And he who remembers this when he sees the soul of anyone whose vision is perplexed and weak, will not be too ready to laugh. He will first ask whether that soul has come out of the brighter life, and is unable to see because unaccustomed to the dark, or having turned from darkness to the day is dazzled by excess of light. And then he will count one happy in his condition and state of being. 80. Chapter 5. Painting with Words. The ancient grey walls gleamed whitely under the harvest moon, throwing deep black shadows across the well-raked gravel of the drive. Old indeed, it was, and mellow with the love which is bestowed on well-loved things.